or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Okay, this is the rabbit. Let me see if I can get Jim in.
Well, I'm very pleased to say that I've been connected now to Studio B, and I welcome all of you to The Raw Deal. This is Jim Fetzer, your host. There's lots of news, but because Mitchell is out of contact, we won't be able to field calls. As an alternative, I want to suggest sending me email questions to jim@moonrockbooks.com. Jim@moonrockbooks.com. That's a plural, .com. Send me questions, and I'll do my best to answer them, get them on the air. So anytime you feel like, you know, you got a question, go ahead and send it, even if I don't field it until the last part of the show. Meanwhile, we have a brutal new poll revealing a five-alarm fire for Democrats as GOP gains significantly among blacks and Hispanic voters. This is quite telling, but not surprising. A new Wall Street poll depicts what's being described as a five-alarm fire for the Democrat Party. A poll of 1,500 registered voters showed a majority, 57%, disapprove of Biden's job performance. 63% believe the country is headed in the wrong direction. 65% believe the economy is headed in the wrong direction. For those who are unaware, the direction of the country question is a highly reliable indicator of how the midterm elections are going to turn out. Those horrible numbers for the Democratic Party, which exercises the most political control in Washington, underscores the uphill battle they face if they want to retain control after the 2022 midterm elections. Well, let me guarantee you, it ain't going to happen unless, of course, they can steal the election again the way they did in 2020. Indeed, a majority of respondents overwhelmingly believe that Biden is not focused on the right issue, disapprove of his handling of the economy, inflation, the border crisis, immigration, and crime. They also agree Biden is not a strong weaker. Compounding the problem, more registered voters are likely to vote for Republicans than Democrats, 46-41 in the upcoming. Thus, they believe the Republican Party is the antidote to the problem Biden and the Democrats have failed to fix, actually the disasters they have created, especially by reversing Trump policies that were making the country energy independent and on the right track. This is all pretty distressing stuff, the amount of damage that the Democrats have been doing to the country. Despite all these problems, it gets even worse because Republicans are making significant inroads among Hispanic and black voters. Since the last journal poll in November, Republicans have gained 9 points among Hispanic voters, while Democrats have lost 21 among black voters. In the November, 56% of black voters said they favored voting for a Democrat. Now it's only 35%. That's among blacks, which has historically been the most reliable Democrat voting base. Support for Republicans among black voters have risen a whopping 12% from the November survey to 27% today. Moreover, it's fair to say that if these numbers are anything close to the actual results, the Democrats will be massacred in November. Now, I think anticipating they're going to be wiped out, they're doing their best to loot the Treasury while they can still do it. Thus, the House has passed this massive $1.5 trillion omnibus spending package, a 3,000-page bill released only hours before the vote after a 1:30 a.m. meeting. How disgraceful is this? In another jaw-dropping dereliction of duty by our elected representatives, the House voted to approve a massive pork-stuffed $1.5 trillion spending package Wednesday, despite not having any time to review its nearly 3,000 pages of content. And you can never be sure what's in there. My God, it could be something horrible. The bill includes $13.6 billion for Ukraine and European allies. We'll fund the government through September 30th if it passes the Senate. Tuesday night, the Democrat House Rules Committee held a meeting and at 1:30 to finalize the package. They released the final text before 3 a.m., giving lawmakers less than 12 hours to read its content before the vote, which was set for 1:30 p.m. Eastern. Most lawmakers, if not all, weren't even awake when the bill was released, so they didn't receive it until the morning, leaving them just a few hours to decide what to do. Despite the last-minute release, a defense motion passed 361-69, the domestic 260-171. Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's a hero to me, slammed House Speaker Pelosi and her handpicked committee for the underhanded tactics as she announced the incident. She also uploaded a video to express her outrage. The America First representative explained she was shocked of being blindsided by an absolutely horrendous bill called the legislative process completely broken because of the Democrats' unwavering partisanship and Pelosi's corruption. Pelosi should be completely unseated as Speaker of the House, Green asserts. She's splendid. Listen to this. I want to tell you how corrupt Congress is. Now, you'll not believe what happened last night. As a matter of fact, I'm still shocked about it, and the rest of the Republicans were all shocked about it. So for all of us here in Washington, we woke up earlier this morning. We found out it was too late to go and put amendments in to try to argue back, try to get anything removed from this horrendous, absolutely horrendous $1.5 trillion spending bill. We weren't able to do that because the Democrats snuck it through. They did not tell us ahead of time. No one had any idea until the committee put it on the website after midnight. This is not how Congress is supposed to work. It's completely broken. So when you look at our government and you're shocked and cannot believe things that happened here in Washington, D.C., I'm telling you, this is how corrupt it is. Wonderful. We're supposed to vote on this $1.5 trillion omnibus bill today, and no one's read it. No one has read the 2,741 pages of the bill. Just like other massive federal spending packages, this is chock full of terrible spending and horrific policy proposals, some of the worst of which have been found buried in the thousands of pages and have been highlighted by Representative Chip Roy of Texas and Jim Banks of Indiana. The pair called up provisions that include massive amount of foreign spending, as well as millions funneled to Planned Parenthood. Now that the package has made its way past the House, it will face a tougher hurdle in the Senate, albeit one it will likely also pass thanks to the support of several rhinos like Mitch McConnell, has been advocating for the spending bill to include more aid for Ukraine than the Democrats had originally planned. Meanwhile, and this is a positive development, NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has declared that Ukraine's NATO membership is not relevant or on the agenda. Many will realize the prospect of Ukraine becoming a NATO member was one of the factors affecting Vladimir Putin's decision to conduct a special military operation in Ukraine, which he laid out in a masterful speech on February 24th, which you can find archived on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. This speech shows that Putin has a wonderful grasp of the history and geopolitics of the region and documents the perfidy, the treason practiced by the United States and the West from the beginning, where during discussions about the dissolution of the Soviet Union that would take place in 1991, Ronald Reagan and James Baker, then Secretary of State, assured Mikhail Gorbachev, who was responsible for declaring the dissolution, that the West would not encroach a single inch to the east to politicize or militarize the newly independent sovereign states that would emerge. Instead, while NATO at the time had 16 members, today it has 30. How did that happen? By militarizing 14 more, including a large number of Eastern Bloc nations, contrary to the solemn assurances. Thus, one of the most important reasons why Putin has had to move into Ukraine is to stop this effort to put NATO weaponry on the border of Russia. Think about it. How would we feel if, say, China put missile batteries on our border with Mexico or our border with Canada? We would find that offensive. We would find that unacceptable. We would not tolerate it. Well, similarly for Putin. Let me tell you, if you read that speech, you will be impressed, because he shows himself to be completely in command of the historical facts, of the political significance, of the threats with which he's having to deal. And, of course, we've had massive substantiation of what he gave as his rationale for the intervention since, including, of course, these biolabs in Ukraine that the United States was funding. Meanwhile, NATO's membership was never imminent and will not be on the agenda in the near future, said the NATO Secretary General. It's been clear for a long time membership for Ukraine was not something that was imminent, not something which is relevant in the near future. But he ought to declare that Ukraine will remain neutral, not become a member of NATO ever. Instead, he said, Ukraine has the right to pursue NATO membership and the organization respects every nation's choice. Nevertheless, it's up to the now 30 NATO allies to decide whether Ukraine is ready for membership. Well, let me tell you, it will never be ready for membership. And Vladimir Putin is not going to tolerate any such nonsense. Back in February 2019, then Ukrainian President Poroshenko, who had been introduced as a stooge, a Western stooge, in a coup that was carried out in 2014 under the supervision of Victoria Nuland, then an undersecretary of state using $5 billion of U.S. American taxpayer dollars to depose the then president, who was favorable to Russia, a Putin ally, and replace him with a Western stooge. This was the beginning of the end. What Americans don't understand is that Russia's intervention now is in response to the Nuland coup executed in 2014, about which they are largely oblivious, very parallel to what happened in Iran when in 1979 there was a popular uprising to retake control of the government of Iran from the Shah, who had been imposed by the CIA after a coup it had executed there in 1953 under the supervision of Kermit Roosevelt, a cousin of Teddy. This was the first coups, assassinations, and the like the CIA would conduct all over the world. So they displace a democratically elected government of Iran, headed by Mossadegh, with a CIA stooge, the Shah, who is vicious tyrant, who's Slavic secret police were among the most vicious and sadistic ever known to the world. That is what we did to Iran before Iran retook control of its own government and seized the American embassy. Notice how cleverly the media cut us off from the relevant information. We don't know about the coup in Iran, so we think that when the Iranians retake in 79, that it was them striking first when we had done our dirty work back in 1953. Now in 2022, when Russia intervenes in Ukraine, we don't realize it's because of a coup that was carried out by the United States in 2014. On the Russian side, President Putin said Russia has had to lay down red lines to prevent Ukraine from joining NATO, saying Ukraine's growing ties with the alliance would make it a launch pad for NATO missiles targeted at Russia. What could be more obvious? The NATO allies have been shy about clarifying their stance on having Ukraine join NATO, though it was not on their agenda before Putin ordered the incursion into Ukraine, which has, of course, caused millions to flee. Some NATO leaders have admitted that its membership is not on the agenda and have even voiced objections to its becoming a member. German Chancellor Scholz, for example, said that Ukraine's NATO membership will not take place. He added, I made it clear in Moscow and in my visit this option, Ukraine's membership of NATO is not on the table and will not take place. I said publicly, we all know Ukraine's membership is not on the alliance's agenda. That was understood by the American president, understood by the French president. He shares Russian President Putin's security concerns and clarified to Putin, Ukraine will not be allowed to join NATO. Meanwhile, despite the risk of a nuclear war, there are calls growing for the U.S. to impose a no-fly zone, which would mean direct fighting between the U.S. and Russia because it would entail shooting down Russian planes and helicopters. Biden has observed that this would mean World War III amid growing calls for the U.S. to impose a no-fly zone. In order to impose a no-fly zone, the U.S. and NATO would have to shoot down Russian planes and take out surface-to-air missiles inside Russia. Despite the risk of war with Russia, which could quickly turn nuclear, some members of Congress are warming to the idea. Imagine members of Congress who are willing to put the United States in jeopardy of a nuclear war with Russia. And let me remind you, Russian military equipment is far superior to American. They have far better anti-missile missiles. They have far superior anti-submarine torpedoes. They have far superior anti-ship missiles. If it comes down to a war between NATO and Russia, Russia, I surmise, could take out NATO forces, including ships, tanks, whatever, you name it, in the first 30 minutes. The first 30 minutes. That would be a delay to see if the U.S. were going to respond. And if the U.S. were to respond, we would be annihilated. This is just insanity. Nevertheless, Adam Kinzinger, a Republican from Illinois, was one of the first members of Congress to call for the U.S. to impose a no-fly zone. Joe Manchin, otherwise a smart guy, has warmed to the idea. Representative Maria Salazar has said she's in favor of a no-fly zone, too. Politico has published an open letter signed by 27 foreign policy experts urging the Biden administration to impose a limited no-fly zone. But since Russian air defense missiles can shoot down planes across Ukraine, the prospect of a limited no-fly zone is impossible. It's like being a little bit pregnant. It's also getting favorable media coverage. Some outlets publishing op-eds arguing, endorsing the idea. One of the no-fly zone's greatest proponents, of course, is President Zelensky of Ukraine, who uses every opportunity to call on the West to close the sky. So far, the Biden admin is holding firm on not fighting Russia directly in Ukraine through a no-fly zone or boots in the ground. We will not fight a war against Russia in Ukraine. Direct conflict between NATO and Russia is World War III, something we must strive to prevent, displaying a modicum of sanity from an irrational guy who has no cognitive competence. In an interview Friday, Pentagon spokesman John Kirby explained why the U.S. could not impose a no-fly zone. It is combat. There's no way you could do it without being willing to shoot and be shot at. It is combat. And I don't think it's in anyone's interest, certainly not Ukraine's, for the U.S. and Russia to be getting in a war in their airspace. While standing firm on the no-fly zone, the Biden admin is still risking provoking Moscow by flooding Ukraine with weapons and sharing intel with the Ukrainians as they fight Russia. Meanwhile, it turns out that deleted web pages show Obama led the effort to build a Ukraine-based biolab handling especially dangerous pathogens. This is very serious. A deleted web article recovered by the National Pulse reveals that former President Barack Obama spearheaded an agreement leading to the construction of biolabs handling especially dangerous pathogens in Ukraine. The news came the same day that the Biden regime apparatchik Victoria Nuland admitted to the Senate under oath that the U.S. government is concerned about biological research facilities falling into Russian hands as a result of the ongoing conflict. Originally posted on June 18th of 2010, the article, Biolab Opens in Ukraine, details how Obama, while then serving as an Illinois senator, helped negotiate a deal to build a level 3 biosafety lab in the Ukrainian city of Odessa. The article also highlighted the work of former Senator Dick Lugar, and it was included in issue number 818 of the United States Air Force Counterproliferation Center's Outreach Journal. Here's an article from June 17, 2010. Biolab opens in Ukraine. U.S. Senator Dick Lugar applauded the opening of the Interim Central Reference Laboratory in Odessa, Ukraine this week, announcing it will be instrumental in researching dangerous pathogens used by bioterrorists. What you have to understand is it's the United States that is a bioterrorist. I mean, this is outrageous. The Level 3 Biosafety Lab, the first built under the expanded authority of the Nunn-Lugar Cooperative Threat Reduction Program, will be used to study anthrax, tularemia and Q fever, as well as other dangerous pathogens. The continuing cooperation of non-Luger partners has improved safety for all people against weapons of mass destruction and potential terrorist use, in addition to advancement in the prevention of pandemics and public health consequences. But up until Victoria Nuland appeared before the Senate and acknowledged we had these labs, the mainstream media and the government was denying it. It was Russian propaganda. It was disinformation. But, of course, one day's conspiracy theory today's turns out to be tomorrow's accepted truth. This has happened again and again and again. A 2011 report from the National Academy of Sciences Committee on Anticipating Biosecurity Challenges of the Global Expansion of High-Containment Biological Laboratories explained the Odessa-based lab is responsible for the identification of especially dangerous biological pathogens. So it's no surprise that Victoria Nuland, in an unexpected moment of candor, would acknowledge that, in fact, these labs are there. Among the viruses the lab studied were Ebola and viruses of pathogenicity group 2 by using use of virology, molecular, serological, and express methods. Additionally, the lab provided special training for specialists on biosafety and biosecurity issues during handling of dangerous biological pathogenic agents. The Unearthed Biolab facility falls intense scrutiny over whether the U.S. government's decision to fund risky gain-of-function research in Wuhan, the Communist Chinese Party-run lab with military ties. Surprise, surprise. We know that the coronavirus research began at Fort Detrick, Maryland, then shifted to the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and then when that was closed, to Wuhan with massive funding from Obama by way of Anthony Tony the Rat Fauci. Just disgusting. We'll be right back after this break.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
I don't want to disillusion anyone who thinks the U.S. is good guys in relation to germ warfare and the like, but here's an article that was published way back on September 25th, 2016. Over and over again, the military has conducted dangerous biowarfare experiments on Americans. This is not about labs in Ukraine. This is on Americans right here in the USA. On September 20th, 1950, a U.S. Navy ship just off the coast of San Francisco used a giant hose to spray a cloud of microbes into the air and into the city's famous fog. The military was testing how a biological weapon attack would affect the 800,000 residents of the city. The people of San Francisco had no idea. The Navy continued the test for 7 days, potentially causing at least one death. It was among the first large-scale biological weapon trials that would be conducted under a germ warfare testing program that went on for 20 years from 1949 to 1969. The goal was to deter the use of biological weapons against the United States and its allies, and to retaliate if deterrence failed, the government would later explain. Fundamental to the development of a deterrent strategy was the need for a thorough study and analysis of our vulnerability to overt and covert attack. Of the 239 known tests in the program, 239 known tests, San Francisco is notable for two reasons, according to Dr. Leonard Cole, who documented the episode in his book, Clouds of Secrecy, the Army's Germ Warfare Tests Over Populated Areas. Hospital staff were so shocked at the appearance of a patient infected with a bacteria, Serratia marcinensis, that had never been found in the hospital and was rare in the area, they published an article about it in a medical journal. The patient, Edward Nevin, died after the infection spread to his heart. S. marcinensis was one of the two types of bacteria the Navy ship had sprayed over the Bay Area. It wasn't until the 1970s that Americans, as Cole wrote in the book, learned that for decades they had been serving as experimental animals for agencies of their government. San Francisco wasn't the first or the last experiment on citizens who had not given informed consent. Other experiments involved testing mind-altering drugs on unsuspecting citizens. In one shocking, well-known incident, government researchers studied the effects of syphilis on black Americans without informing the men that they had the disease. They were told they had bad blood. Researchers withheld treatment after it became available so they could continue studying the illness, despite the devastating and life-threatening implications of doing so for the men and their families. But it was a germ warfare test that Cole focused upon. All these other tests, while terrible, they affected people counted in the hundreds at most. But when you talk about exposing millions to potential harm by spreading around certain chemicals or biological agents, the quantitative effect of that is just unbelievable. Every one of the biological and chemical agents the Army used had been challenged by medical reports, he said, despite the Army's contention in public hearings that they'd selected harmless simulants of biological weapons. The military tested how a biological or chemical weapon could spread throughout the country by spraying bacteria as well as various chemical powders, including an especially controversial one called zinc cadmium sulfide. Low-flying airplanes would take off, sometimes near the Canadian border, and they would fly down through the Midwest, dropping their payloads over cities. These sprays were tested on the ground, too, with machines that would release clouds from city rooftops or intersections to see how they spread. In the book, Cole cites military reports that documented various Minneapolis tests, including one where a chemical spread through a school. The clouds were clearly visible. To prevent suspicion, the military pretended that they were testing a way to mask the whole city in order to protect it. They told city officials the tests involved efforts to measure ability to lay smoke screens about the city to hide it in case of nuclear attack. The potential toxicity of that controversial compound, zinc cadmium sulfide, is debated. One component, cadmium, is highly toxic and can cause cancer. Some reports suggest a possibility that the zinc cadmium sulfide could perhaps degrade into cadmium, but a 1997 report from the National Research Council concluded the Army's secret test, quote, did not expose residents of the United States and Canada to chemical levels considered harmful, quote. However, the same report noted research on the chemical use was sparse, mostly based on very limited animal studies. Meanwhile, a 1966 study of the vulnerability of subway passengers in New York was a covert attack with biological agents. The New York subway system experiments are among the most shocking in terms of number of people exposed. In a field test called A Study of the Vulnerability of Subway Passengers in New York City to Covert Attack with Biological Agents, military officials tried to see how easy it would be to unleash biological weapons using the New York City subway. They would break light bulbs full of bacteria on the tracks to see how they spread throughout the city. If you can get trillions of bacteria into a light bulb and throw it on the track as a train pulls into a station, They'll get pulled through the air as the train leaves, Cole said, traveling through tunnels and into different stations. Clouds would engulf people as trains pulled away, but documents say they brushed their clothing, looked upon at the grating apron, and walked on. No one was concerned. In a 1995 Newsday story, reporter Dennis Dugan contacted retired Army scientist Charles Senseney, who had testified about the experiments to a Senate subcommittee in 1975. In his testimony, he explained that one light bulb full of bacteria dropped at 14th Street easily spread the bacteria up to at least 58th Street. But he declined to reveal anything to the Newsday reporter. I don't want to get near this, he said to Dugan. I testified because I was told I had to by people at the Department of Defense. I better get off the phone. Experiments continued in New York for 6 days using Bacillus subtilis, then known as Bacillus globigi and S. marcinens. Particularly controversial test. Another controversial experiment described in Cole's book involved a test at the Norfolk Navy Supply Center. The experimenters packed crates with fungal spores to see how they would affect the people in packing the crates. Coldbook noticed portions of a report about an Army test in 1951 involving Aspergillus fumigatus indicate the Army intentionally exposed a disproportionate number of black people to the organism. Most of the employees at the supply center were black. Many of these experiments on the American public were first investigated by what we would consider questionable sources. One 1979 Washington Post news story discussed open-air experiments in the Tampa Bay area involving the release of pertussis, or whooping cough, in 1955. State records show that whooping cough cases in Florida spiked from 339 with one death in 1954 to 1,080 with 12 deaths in 1955 following the test. But it's hard to trace how accurate the information about the whooping cough release is. The only documentation goes back to an investigation by the Church of Scientology. The Church of Scientology formed a group called American Citizens for Honesty in Government that spent a significant amount of time investigating controversial experiments run by the Army and the CIA. Through FOIA requests, they uncovered a number of documents related to these experiments in the late 1970s. Cole understands why some people are skeptical of those reports. I certainly am not a member, and I think a lot of what they do is quackery, but in this case, I have no reason to believe any of this isn't real. Meanwhile, we have a Cold War mentality making an effect. Here's an image. This is tomorrow, America under communism. I'm sorry to say we're far closer today under Bush and under Biden and Harris than we've ever been in our history. Whereas I've repeatedly observed, if you assume that George Soros is the acting president, then you can understand what's going on. By opening the borders, over 2 million illegal immigrants in the first year of Biden, the supply chain problem, promoting the coronavirus, the vax, which is toxic, even lethal, killing millions, you know, vaccinating the military, making it a woke military incapable of defending itself, where it appears many of these migrants are going to be taken into the military and promised citizenship if they are willing to serve, where their inclination or willingness to fire on the American people is overwhelmingly greater than that of any real Americans. It's just disgusting what's going on here. Not to mention trashing our energy independence by canceling the XL pipeline and permits to drill on public land. And now he's going begging to Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Venezuela, Iran for oil. This is humiliating to the United States, but it should come as no surprise. The Democrats stole the election in 2020 in order to destroy America. There can be no doubt about it. The signs are everywhere. Many of the documents Scientologists made public were the same documents he'd received doing his own research redacted in the same places. Perhaps the hardest question is how much information is still missing. As Cole writes in his book, many details about the Army's tests over populated areas remain secret. Most of the test reports are still classified or cannot be located, although a few of the earlier have become available in response to Freedom of Information Act requests and in conjunction with the Nevin case. Among those available, sections have been blocked out and pages are missing. Military officials were called to testify before Congress in 1977 after information about these biological warfare experiments was revealed. At the time, those officials said determining just how vulnerable the U.S. was to biological attack required extensive research and development to determine precisely our vulnerability, the efficacy of our protective measures, and the tactical and strategic capability of various delivery systems and agents, according to a record of that testimony quoted in Clouds of Secrecy. So, what's happening now? Cole says it's hard to see these events now from the perspective people had then. There's a different mindset in the country then, a Cold War mentality. But, he argues, that didn't justify glossing over the already known potential danger of the agents used. At the same time, part of what the military knows about how clouds of chemicals spread come from these experiments, he says the knowledge gleaned from the warfare testing programs helped inform the U.S. reaction when reports came in on the potential use of chemical weapons in the first Gulf War. Well, surprise, surprise. Those reports of the use of chemical weapons in the first Gulf War were evidence about the use by the United States of these chemical weapons. Cole says the obvious question on people's minds now is what's happening. After all, if secret tests could occur, then what prevents them from continuing? Are they, in fact, still going on? Back in 2016, he said he doesn't think it's likely, but I'll tell you, he's got it wrong. I would never swear on your life or mine that nothing illegitimate is happening based on what I do know. I don't have any sensors illicit activity now that would involve risking exposure to tons of people as happened in the 50s and the 60s. But he's ignoring the coronavirus pandemic and the use of the Pfizer and the Moderna mRNA vax. Now that Pfizer is releasing, you know, tons of records, it turns out that the side effects with the Pfizer number over 1,200 plus side effects, including death, that Pfizer knew. How this could ever have been approved, even for experimental purposes, is bewildering until you understand big money was shelled out to buy up the experts in the authorities in the CDC, the FDA, NIH, and WHO. This is a massive expenditure of money in an effort to seize control of the entirety of the world by the World Economic Forum in honor or respect for the Rothschild banking empire. I have no doubt about what's going on here. After all, spending vast sums of money, they're only going to recover it when they have the opportunity to seize control of the entirety of planet Earth, which is the objective. Biological agents are still studied and tested, but informed consent is more widely appreciated now. There's also less of a Cold War mentality that would be used to justify this research. Well, mind you, even though the Nuremberg Code requires informed consent, which entails explaining to anyone before they are subjected to an experimental medical procedure not only the purported benefits but also the risk. Now running, you know, 50 pages long of the risks here, I mean, it's just absolutely stunning, but also the alternative available treatments that would be non-invasive, which, of course, would include ivermectin and ACQ. So we have this massive campaign to stomp out knowledge of awareness of ivermectin and ACQ, which are proven to be remarkably effective. We even have an article published in the Journal of Virology, a publication of the National Institute of Health, back in 2005, extolling the virtues of HCQ in relation to coronaviruses as a wonder drug. It'll prevent it if you don't have it, cure it if you do. And ivermectin has proven to be remarkably effective. I personally have taken both. Four recent reports, however, show experiments in this area have gone on longer than we thought. In 2001, a New York Times report revealed projects testing biological weapons that began under the Clinton administration and continued under the second Bush administration, that would be with W. A 1972 treaty theoretically prohibited developing biological weapons, but this program justified it with the argument that new weapons needed to be studied in order to develop adequate defenses. And the war on terror raises other concerns. Well, bear in mind, this is a kind of treaty that the Russians are protesting that we violated, massively. Now, there's increasing awareness that the Remington settlement for $73 million is backdoor gun control. Check this out. Editor's note, because you can find this article published on my blog. When the settlement was proposed at $33 million, I was calling it out as an insurance scam. The obvious reason is that there's been no judicial determination that anyone died at Sandy Hook, as I explained there. Upping the ante to $73 million is all the more insulting. I'm making an effort to intervene in the Remington bankruptcy case to defeat the fraud, now a bankruptcy scam, where I am demonstrating to the bankruptcy court that the underlying issue has never been addressed and that this would be a blatant abuse of the rights of stockholders, stakeholders, and ultimately taxpaying citizens of the United States. As I explained in my defending the First and Second Amendments, they want to use insurance to require registration, which will be followed by confiscation. That's the plan. Here's the piece. Remington Arms, America's oldest gun manufacturer, settled for $73 million in a wrongful death suit filed by the family of several victims of the Sandy Hook shooting. Bushmaster, the company that manufactured the rifle used in the shooting, or so we have been told, is owned by Remington Outdoor Company. The settlement followed 7+ years of litigation, 2 Remington bankruptcies, and a previous offer of $33 million from the gun manufacturer, which the plaintiffs declined. The outcome of the case had been touted by anti-gunners, the corporate press, and the Democrat politicians as a victory over the gun lobby. President Biden called it historic. The anti-gunners, however, are wrong. The settlement is neither a victory nor historic, but instead reveals another way political actors can undermine gun rights, which is why they're so excited about it. Gun manufacturers are usually protected from these kinds of lawsuits by the 2005 Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, which prevents arms makers from being sued due to the misuse or criminal use of their products by third parties. Without this protection, the gun industry would be subject to unique and extremely broad liability claims, making it one of the only sensible pieces of legislation Congress has passed in the last 150 years. Also explain why it's so reviled by Hillary Clinton and her political allies. Gun control advocates claim the act provides blanket immunity from lawsuits, but that's false. Under the law, gun manufacturers can be still sued on multiple grounds, including traditional product liability. A gun is defective and causes injury, negligence. They transferred the gun to someone they had reasonable cause to believe was prohibited from owning a firearm, and violating laws surrounding the sale, such as lying on the books. The plaintiff's attorney, Joshua Koskoff, packed the initial lawsuit with a slew of allegations that were dismissed by a Connecticut lower court, as the allegations were invalid under the law. However, in 2019, the Connecticut Supreme Court ruled that the wrongful death suit could move forward on the basis of wrongful advertising, a claim included in the original set of allegations. Koskoff argued Remington knowingly marketed and promoted the Bushmaster for use in assaults against human beings. In my opinion, this is completely ridiculous. The plaintiffs started marketing slogans such as, consider your man card reissued, or clear the room, cover the rooftop, rescue the hostage. None of those claims are inherently violent and certainly not an appeal to young men to commit mass murder. For example, Ford claims its trucks are built with military-grade aluminum, which would mean that victims of the Waukesha massacre should be able to sue Ford. Why would a truck need anything military-grade unless it was supposed to be rammed through 80 people? Although the case was allowed to move forward, the Connecticut Supreme Court acknowledged that winning the case would be a Herculean task. The plaintiffs would have to prove Bushmaster's marketing contributed to the shooter's decision to commit the atrocity. Since the shooter did not buy the gun himself, but instead, we are told, murdered his mother and stole it from her, it's not hard to see how the claim that advertising was relevant whatsoever would have been a stretch. But if the case was virtually unwinnable, why did Remington sell? Listen to this. Technically, Remington did not settle, for insurance companies that represented it settled. Moreover, a settlement by definition means Remington did not accept liability. The idea this is a victory is asinine. The point, however, still stands. The bankrupt Remington and its agents settled because winning the court case would have been even more costly than settling because of the additional legal fees required. Keep in mind, litigation had already been going for over 7 years. It is astronomically less expensive to be a plaintiff since they are generally paid from the settlement, that is, after litigation is finished. The defense needs to pay up front. Activists didn't just keep hurling frivolous lawsuit after lawsuit at gun manufacturers until something sticks. No big deal if the case gets thrown out. Simply take notes and try again. Since the government legal system is slow and awful, the mountain of attorney fees needed to defend against these suit places an enormous financial burden on gun companies. This is very serious stuff, and I want you to understand this is all related to my Sandy Hook lawsuit and going before the U.S. Supreme Court. Gun control has been a losing item for years, but if this settlement becomes precedent, that could change. If gun control losses become prevalent, activists can abuse the legal structure and drive gun makers out of business. We'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years.
to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Remember now, since Mitchell's not here, if anyone has any questions they'd like me to address, mail them to me at jim@moonrockbooks.com, jim@moonrockbooks.com, and I'll try to field them to get them on the air. Meanwhile, we have Lindsey Graham giving a variation on the theme, no fly zone if Russia uses chemical weapons. Well, if you expand that to chemical or biological, it's the U.S. that's been using chemical biological weapons and has the labs there, not the United States. Senator Lindsey Graham insisting he does not want to see U.S. boots on the ground in Ukraine Sunday called for a no-fly zone to be instituted over the war-torn country if Russian President Putin orders a chemical weapon strike. Because that would be a war crime. The South Carolina Republican also said on Sunday Morning Futures with Maria Bartiromo, Biden has folded on the question of sending former MiG fighters from Poland into Ukraine and rejected the president's contention that allowing jets would mean the beginning of World War III. I'm all in, Graham said. I don't want no boots on the ground, no fly zone yet. If chemical weapons are used by Putin, then I support a no-fly zone. Does he realize he's putting at risk the entire population of the United States by these utterly irresponsible remarks? Because Vladimir Putin has made it very clear he's not going to tolerate outside intervention. The senator, meanwhile, called it deplorable to Meade, dishonorable, that the United States would not back the plan to transfer 28 fighters from Poland to Ukraine to defend itself against Russian aggression. The Biden administration stopped that transfer. One minute they say they are not using planes we have, but if we give them more, it would be World War III. What happened was Biden threatened Putin, threatened Biden, and he folded like a cheap suit. Graham further said Sunday, it appears Biden is more worried about Putin losing than Ukraine winning. The Biden administration has no stomach for this fight, he said. The reason they are slow walking military aid to the Ukrainians is they never expected Putin to lose, and they cannot embrace the idea that he would lose. He is an irate deal maker in the eyes of the Biden administration. In my eyes, he's a menace to mankind. And he is a war criminal and needs to be taken out by his own people. If the United States spent more time thinking about helping Ukraine than keeping Putin in power, we would be better off. Well, Lindsey Graham made a lot of really stupid comments lately, including calling for the assassination of Vladimir Putin. It's, of course, against the law for the United States to assassinate a foreign head of state. That's why, after Saddam Hussein was taken out in a B-1 bomber strike on the 7th of April, 2003, just 3 weeks into the war in Iraq, and they prepared to announce it at the Mission Accomplished event aboard the USS Liberty off of the coast of San Diego, someone realized, and we suspect it was Donald Rumsfeld, that three presidents, Reagan, Carter, and Ford, had all signed executive orders against the assassination of foreign leaders. So that if Bush had gone forward to announce, excuse me, to announce that they'd taken out Saddam Hussein, and I was contacted by the mother of the B-1 bomber pilot who conducted it. I've got two chapters about it in the book, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, if you want to follow up. It's really fascinating stuff that he would have been acknowledging he'd committed a crime under U.S. law, which is why the whole thing was such a fiasco. He was inhibited from saying the whole explain the whole reason that it was there. So instead they stuck a body double in the ground, put him on trial, and claimed that this was Saddam Hussein, probably negotiating with him, telling him there'd be a platform under the noose so he would actually be hanged by the neck until dead. But then, of course, simplest way to resolve the matter, since you can't afford to have the guy wandering around or sipping Mai Tais in Tahiti, you just take out the platform. He's dead. Joe Viles, who's a photojournalist from Australia, was the first to notice the difference revolving around their teeth. Saddam Hussein had excellent teeth and an overbite, meaning his upper teeth extend further beneath his, over his lower teeth. Joe Viles noticed that the double that they put in the spider hole and that claimed to have discovered had bad teeth and an underbite, meaning his lower teeth extend beyond his upper teeth. Not the same guy. Similar features differentiate Paul McCartney from his body double, commonly referred to as Paul, F-A-U-L, for false Paul or fake Paul, where false Paul or fake Paul is replacement. Billy Shears has good teeth and a normal palate, but Paul McCartney had bad teeth and a narrow palate. I spell this out also in that same book, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either. So there's a lot of fascinating stuff, not just about the moon landing, where it's obvious we did not go, but about Paul McCartney's death and replacement by a guy I regard as an even better musician, about Saddam Hussein, the first death of Saddam Hussein, and the second death of Osama bin Laden in that fake raid in a compound in Pakistan. Osama had already been dead for a decade, but Barack Obama found it advantageous to resurrect him and have him die again to position himself for a triumphal re-election as the man who got the most wanted man in the world. But it was all political theater, which is what we're getting from the Democrats. And Barack Obama played a key role paving the way by mollifying the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948, which precluded the use of the same techniques of propaganda and disinformation that were being used abroad within the United States by the Smith Modernization Act of 2012, just in time to bring us Sandy Hook. As far as the threats of World War II, Graham said, those are based on a bluff from Russia. Putin knows that, he said, no one wins a nuclear exchange. I'm calling for the crushing of the Russian economy. Even though our war and fight is not with the Russian people, it is with Putin. The only way this war ends is with Putin going to jail and being taken out by his own people. This is just awful. And punishing the Russian people, by the way, is a form of collective punishment that is forbidden under international law. That is a war crime. So while Lindsey Graham is, you know, grandstanding and claiming Putin's committing war crime, Lindsey Graham is advocating the commission of war crimes, which the U.S. is doing enthusiastically by punishing the American people collectively for actions by their leadership. The Ukraine situation, he added, has resulted in industrialized chaos. You have China saying, if you give any weapons to Taiwan, we're coming after you. You have the Iranians firing at an American base in Iraq. You have Afghanistan becoming a new safe haven for terrorists. And you have, I think I smell a sellout when it comes to Ukraine. Putin does not want a neutral Ukraine, he added, but to recreate the former Soviet Union. Well, that's a nice example of the straw man fallacy. Exaggerate a position to make it easier to attack. Putin has no interest in recreating the former Soviet Union. So either Lindsey Graham is unaware of Putin's speech of February 24th, where he lays out his rationale in a very exact way, or he's deliberately lying. Either way, he's unqualified to be providing advice to the American government or the American people about what to do. A senator also said the Biden admin looks at Putin as a partner in its call for climate change and Iran as a deal maker rather than a war criminal. Let me just add, this whole business about climate change is complete and utter nonsense. Joe Olson, who's a sensational engineer qualified in four areas of engineering, including electrical, mechanical, civil, structural, and I have been doing a series on climate change you do not want to miss. There is no correlation between the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere and the temperature of the Earth, which has changed periodically in a fairly predictable fashion, so that the whole claim that it is carbon and fossil fuels are creating the problem is just utter nonsense. It's complete pseudoscience. Frankly, it's just more bullshit. But it can have tremendous consequences where it turns out that, you know, electric cars are going to be a complete disaster. They require all kinds of precious metals, which are in short supply. They're going to be fantastically expensive. It consumes more energy to produce the electricity than it saves. Electric cars have limited mobility. It takes forever to recharge them. You can go to a filling station and fill it up in a couple of minutes, but it takes hours with an electric car. Plus, the batteries have the tendency to catch fire. We had a whole ship loaded with hundreds of very expensive vehicles, Porsches, Mercedes, and electric vehicles, which caught fire because it sank with taking all these cars with it. I mean, it's a catastrophe. This is one more fantastic scheme to destroy the United States. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Bennett has reportedly spoken with both Putin and Zelensky, reportedly recommending Ukraine surrender to Russia. But Graham said the Israeli embassy has denied putting pressure on Zelensky to accept a deal. Here is Israel's chessboard, said Graham. Syria is occupied by Russia. They have Hezbollah and Iranian elements in Syria that threaten the state of Israel. So, of course, they want to take a role. Meanwhile, U.S. officials claim Russian warplanes are firing missiles into Ukraine from out inside Russian airspace. The strategy highlights the danger of the U.S. imposing a no-fly zone, which would require the U.S. to shoot down Russia's planes. An unnamed U.S. official told Defense One, Most Russian warplanes firing on Ukraine are doing so from inside Russian airspace. They claim Russia is flying about 200 sorties a day, mostly launching long-range missiles from its airspace. In comparison, Ukraine, which has 56 operational planes, has been flying between 5 and 10 sorties each day on the average. Ukraine is avoiding flying frequent sorties because Russia's surface-to-air missiles, known as SAMs, can shoot down planes in all areas of Ukraine. The official said Russia has shown a general risk aversion and a cautiousness in the air, despite its countrywide SAM coverage. Ukraine has some air defenses of its own, and the U.S. and its NATO allies are working to bolster them. If the U.S. official's assessment is correct, it highlights the danger of U.S. and NATO imposing a no-fly zone. Ukrainian President Zelensky has been pleading with the West to close the sky even over Ukraine, even though it would mean direct fighting between the U.S. and Russia, which could, I say would, quickly spiral into nuclear war. That's what Lindsey Graham seems to want. Hawks in the U.S. have called on Biden to impose a limited no-fly zone, but since Russian warplanes and SAMs can hit targets across the country from inside Russia, a limited no-fly zone is impossible. To impose a no-fly zone, the U.S. and NATO would have to shoot down Russian warplanes operating inside Russian airspace, would have to take out Russia's SAMs and other air defenses. There's no way a no-fly zone could be limited or not involve the U.S., directly entering the war. Here's a rather fascinating exchange. Tulsi Gabbard has called out Mitt Romney for calling her a treasonous liar and destroys him all on Twitter. Tulsi Gabbard destroyed Mitt Romney in some early morning tweets today. This is published the 14th. After Romney called Gabbard treasonous over the weekend for pointing out the bio labs in Ukraine. In a Twitter storm this morning, Tulsi Gabbard destroyed Rhino Senator Mitt Romney and called for him to do the right thing and resign. Over the weekend, Romney said Gabbard's treasonous lies may well cost lives. This was in response to Gabbard speaking out about the bio labs in Ukraine. Her treasonous lies may well cost lives. Mitt Romney lashes out at Tulsi Gabbard for talking about U.S.-funded bio labs in Ukraine. Rhino Senator Mitt Romney accused former Democrat Representative Tulsi Gabbard of spreading treasonous lies for simply talking about the U.S.-funded biolabs in Ukraine. There are 25-plus U.S.-funded biolabs in Ukraine, which, if breached, would release and spread deadly pathogens to the U.S. and the world, Gabbard said Sunday. We must take action now to prevent disaster, as the Gateway pundit reported. But as Victoria Nuland herself has confirmed, and as the Department of Defense on its own website has acknowledged, in her first two tweets, Gabbard, Tulsi, calls out Romney for highlighting her comments on the biolabs in Ukraine. She says that her statements won't cause a loss of life. They will prevent the spread of pathogens, which would save lives. Then says Romney bizarrely claims securing the labs is treasonous. Here's Tulsi tweeting, Romney, you have called me a treasonous liar for stating the fact there are 25-plus U.S.-funded biolabs in Ukraine, which if breached would release and spread deadly pathogens to the U.S. and world, and therefore must be secured to prevent new pandemics. Bizarrely, you claim that securing these labs, or even calling for securing these labs, is treasonous and will lead to a loss of life, when the exact opposite is obviously true. The spread of pathogens is what will cause the loss of life, not the prevention of such spread. She further shares the labs need to be secured. Senator Romney, please provide evidence that what I said is untrue and treasonous. If you cannot, you should do the honorable thing, apologize, and resign from the Senate. Another, evidence of the existence of such biolabs or vulnerability and the need to take immediate action to secure them is beyond dispute. She then notes that even Biden's Department of State says the labs exist. Number one, State Department's Victoria Nuland acknowledged that labs containing dangerous pathogens exist in Ukraine in her testimony to the U.S. Senate of March 8, 2022. Ukraine has biological research facilities, which, in fact, we're quite concerned Russian troops may be seeking to gain control of. We're working with the Ukrainians on how they can prevent any of their research materials from falling into the hands of Russian forces should they approach. She further adds there's ample evidence of the labs being in Ukraine. Number two, Pentagon fact sheet, March 11, 2022, has numerous statements directly and indirectly confirming the existence of such biolabs. The United States, through BTRP, has invested approximately $200 million in Ukraine since 2005, supporting 46 Ukrainian laboratories, health facilities, and diagnostic sites. She further notes the Pentagon is concerned about the labs, too. Number three, CBS, Face the Nation, March 13, 2022. Correspondent David Martin said a Pentagon official told him they're concerned about the existence of such biolabs in Ukraine. The concern is the Russian will seize one of these biomedical research facilities that Ukraine has, where they do research on deadly pathogens like botulism and anthrax, seize one of these facilities, weaponize a pathogen, and then blame it on Ukraine and the U.S., because the U.S. has been providing support for some of the research being done in those facilities. There definitely are labs in Ukraine. Number four, in April 2020, in refuting Russia's accusation the U.S. is using biolabs in Ukraine to develop biological weapons, the U.S. Embassy in Ukraine acknowledged there are U.S.-funded labs in Ukraine working with pathogens for vaccine and other peaceful purposes. Number five, CNN fact check, March 10, 2022. There are U.S.-funded biolabs in Ukraine. That much is true. Finally, she observed, so, Senator Romney, you have a choice out of pride. Continue to deny the truth or admit you are wrong, apologize, and resign. Aloha. And remember that without the truth, we can be neither safe nor free. Number six. Furthermore, according to the DOD, there are two biolabs in Ukraine that have been under Russian control for some time. Quote, Russia illegally took possession of two Ukrainian-owned laboratories that BTRP upgraded in 2014 and continues to deny Ukrainian access to these facilities. So, Senator Romney, you have a choice. Out of pride, continue to deny the truth or admit you are wrong, apologize, and resign. Aloha. And remember that without the truth, we can be neither safe nor free. Gateway bonded ads. Well done, Gabbard. Well done. I think Tulsi is simply terrific. Now, since Newsweek is even reporting, Vladimir Putin's approval rating gets a boost from a poll inside Russia. President Vladimir Putin enjoyed an increase in popularity in Russia in the weeks before he launched Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, according to the latest polling. Opinion Tractor's Levada Center, a respected non-government research organization, asked citizens whether they approve or disapprove of Putin's leadership. A Russian leader saw an increase in approval from 61% in January of 2022 to 71% in February. That is the highest Putin's approval rating has hit in Levada Center polling since May of 2018, when he scored a 79% approval rating. In February, Putin had a 71% approval, 27% disapproval, 1% gave no answer. Russia's invasion began on February 24th. A separate telephone poll conducted last week suggested 58% of Russians approve of the invasion, while 23% oppose it. Putin received relatively modest support in comparison with typical levels in the early stages of previous incursions, a poll suggested. Gary Langer, a U.S.-based polling expert, obtained the results of the study from the Russian research organization. He did not identify which firms were involved in the research over concern that doing so could aid Kremlin censors. Since Russia began its invasion of Ukraine, the country has increased its censorship of the media. 2 days after the war began, Newsweek reported Russia began telling its media to delete specific stories that painted its invasion in a negative light. The country's media monitoring regulator, Roskomnadzor, launched an investigation regarding dissemination of unreliable, publicly significant information against multiple Russian news organizations. If a report referred to Russia's actions as an assault, an invasion, or a declaration of war, it would have to be deleted. If this were not done, the government would threaten to block the media organization. Roskomnadzor also accused outlets of publishing inaccurate information about the shelling of Ukrainian cities and civilian casualties in Ukraine as a result of actions of the Russian army, according to Radio Free Europe, which, of course, we know is a CIA propaganda outlet. But if you think that's bad, we got the new head of Homeland Security releasing new rules on extremism. DHS will target anyone who believes the election was stolen or challenges Fauci's ever-changing COVID narrative. So if you think Russia's bad, we are worse. In Joe Biden's first year in office, over 2 million illegal aliens from dozens of countries walked into the U.S. across the southern border. This year, the numbers look even greater. Joe Biden and DHS Secretary Mayorkas immediately opened the U.S. border after they came into office. Biden also set another record. Only 59,011 illegals were deported his first year. This was the lowest number since 1995. Here we have even the Washington Post on March 11th. ICE report shows sharp drop in deportations, immigration arrests under Biden. The 59,011 deportations ICE reported last year were the lowest total since 1995, according to Department of Homeland Security statistics. It should be obvious by now that Biden intends to destroy the United States before he leaves office. And I say that's absolutely correct, and you can understand what's going on if you realize George Soros, whose greatest dream is to destroy the United States before his die, is in effect the acting president. Now Mayorkas is working on a very important project. Rather than shut down the border, he's released new rules about extremism. The new guidelines in extremist behavior include those who question the fraud in the 2020 election and anyone who questions the regime's talking points on COVID and its treatment during the mandate. Think about that. This is the United States. We'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Let me reiterate that since Mitchell is out of commission, they had a electrical shortage there. I cannot take calls as I normally would, but you're welcome to send questions to me by email to jim@moonrockbooks.com, jim@moonrockbooks.com. And while I have no questions today as yet, just know that in the future, if you ever want to contact me, that's a very convenient way to do that. jim@moonrockbooks.com. Continuing the new guidelines from our very own Department of Homeland Security, and you'd think we were living in a fascist society because these are fascist techniques. A March 2021 unclassified threat assessment prepared by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, Department of Justice, and DHS, noted that domestic violent extremists who are motivated by a range of ideologies and galvanized by recent political and societal events in the United States posed an elevated threat to the homeland in 2021. These are conservatives and Trump supporters, anyone who, you know, criticizes Biden, we're all lumped together as domestic terrorists. I mean, this is disgusting. It's enough to make you a wretch. The assessment pointed to newer socio-political developments such as narratives of fraud in the recent general election, the emboldening impact of the violent breach of the U.S. Capitol, conditions related to the COVID-19 pandemic, and conspiracy theories promoting violence that will almost certainly spur some domestic violent extremists to try to engage in violence this year. This is just unbelievable nonsense, complete rubbish. The election was stolen. There's massive evidence it's been stolen. Mike Lindell had a three-day symposium on it. We got the 2,000 Mules documentary coming out. The Democrats use these drop boxes. They hired 2,000 to stuff the drop boxes with fake ballots, what they had to take selfies in order to be paid. We've got all the selfies. What happened, of course, on January 6th was fomented by the FBI. It had provocateurs in the midst. We had John Sullivan leading 226 Antifa members dressed as Trump supporters into the Capitol. Nancy Pelosi, I have no doubt, was coordinating the entire event. This is completely disgusting and fabricated, and I don't need to begin to tell you about the pandemic and what's going on there. here again, referring to conspiracy theories, those of us conspiracy theorists are investigating crimes which more often than not lead back to the U.S. government. That's why they want to silence us. Over half the U.S. population questioned the results of the 2020 presidential election. Another half of the public questions the ever-changing COVID talking points coming from the medical elites, including Tony the Rat, who lied under oath about funding gain-of-function research in Chinese labs. If you mention this, however, you may end up on their list. These are really bad people. Current domestic violent extremist threat landscape. A March 2021 unclassified threat assessment prepared by the Office of the Domestic, galvanized by recent, that's a reiteration of what I've already read. So there's a copy of the DHS guidelines you can find online. Meanwhile, and this is fairly unbelievable, Pfizer is trying to promote a fourth booster shot in spite of all the death and devastation. Check this out.
Now, I got the two shots of the vaccine, and I got boosters. I got three shots. So now people are wondering, are they going to have to get a fourth shot? Will we need a fourth shot of another booster to keep our immunity up?
I think we will.
I don't need it.
The triple vaccine in three were going to be enough. This is that CEO of Pfizer telling us you need more to fatten their profit margin. I mean, it's just disgusting. That's SpongeBob SquarePants, by the way, talking about this. Meanwhile, it's all outrageous. Here's a wonderful piece about going green. Listen to this. What's in a battery? Nikola Tesla said it best when he called it an energy storage system. That's an important distinction. Batteries do not make electricity. They store electricity produced elsewhere, primarily by coal, uranium, natural gas-powered plants, or diesel fuel generators. So to say, an EV, an electric vehicle, is a zero-emission vehicle is not at all valid. Also, since 40% of the electricity generated in the U.S. is from coal-fired plants, it falls at 40% of the EVs on the road are coal-powered. Do you see? Einstein's formula, E equals mc squared, tells us it takes the same amount of energy to move a 5,000-pound gasoline-driven automobile a mile as it does an electric one. The only question, again, is what produces the power? To reiterate, it does not come from the battery. The battery is only the storage device, like the gas tank. The gas tank in the car is a storage device for the gasoline. There are two orders of batteries, rechargeable and single-use. The most common single-use batteries are A, AA, AAA, C, D, 9V, and lantern types. Those dry cell species use zinc, magnesium, lithium, silver oxide, or zinc and carbon to store electricity chemically. Please note they all contain toxic heavy metals. Rechargeable batteries only differ in their internal materials, usually lithium-ion, nickel-plated oxide, and nickel-cadmium. The United States uses 3 billion of these two battery types a year, and most are not recycled. They end up in landfills. California is the only state which requires all batteries be recycled. If you throw your small used batteries in the trash, here is what happens to them. All batteries are self-discharging. That means even when not in use, they leak tiny amounts of energy. You have likely ruined a flashlight or two from an old ruptured battery. When a battery runs down, you can no longer power a toy or a light. You think of it as dead. Well, it's not. it continues to leak small amounts of electricity. As the chemicals inside it run out, pressure builds inside the battery's metal casing, and eventually it cracks. The metals left inside then ooze out. The ooze in your ruined flashlight is toxic, and so is the ooze that would inevitably leak from every battery in a landfill. All batteries eventually rupture. It just takes rechargeable batteries longer to end up in the landfill. In addition to dry cell batteries, there are also wet cell ones used in automobiles, boats, and motorcycles. The good thing about those is 90% of them are recycled. Unfortunately, we do not yet know how to recycle single-use ones properly. But that is not the half of it. For those of you excited about electric cars and a green revolution, I want you to take a closer look at batteries and also windmills and solar panels. These three technologies share what we call environmentally destructive embedded costs. Environmentally destructive embedded costs. Everything manufactured has two costs associated with it, embedded costs and operating costs. I will explain embedded costs using a can of baked beans as my subject. In this scenario, baked beans are on sale, so you jump into your car and head to the grocery store. Sure enough, there they are on the shelf for $1.75 a can. As you head to the checkout, you begin to think about the embedded costs in the can of beans. The first cost is the diesel fuel the farmer used to plow the field, till the ground, harvest the beans, and transport them to the food processor. Not only is his diesel fuel an embedded cost, so are the costs to build the tractors, combines, and trucks. In addition, the farmer might use a nitrogen fertilizer made from natural gas. Next is the energy cost of cooking the beans, heating the building, transporting the workers, paying for the vast amounts of electricity used to run the plant. The steel, a can, holding the beans is also an embedded cost. Making the steel can requires mining taconite, shipping it by boat, extracting the iron, placing it in a coal-fired blast furnace, and adding carbon. Then it's back on another truck to take the beans to the grocery store. Finally, adding in the cost of the gasoline, add in the cost of the gasoline for your car. A typical EV, electric vehicle battery, weighs 1,000 pounds, about the size of a travel trunk. It contains 25 pounds of lithium, 60 pounds of nickel, 44 pounds of manganese, 30 pounds of cobalt, 200 pounds of copper, and 400 pounds of aluminum, steel, and plastic. Inside are over 6,000 individual lithium-ion cells. It should concern you that all those toxic components come from mining. For instance, to manufacture each electric vehicle auto battery, you must process 25,000 pounds of brine for the lithium, 30,000 pounds of ore for the cobalt, 5,000 pounds of ore for the nickel, and 25,000 pounds of ore for the copper. All told, you dug up 500,000 pounds of the Earth's crust for just one battery. Get that. All told, you dig up 500,000 pounds of the Earth's crust for just one battery. 68% of the world's cobalt, a significant part of a battery, comes from the Congo. Their mines have no pollution controls, and they employ children who die from handling this toxic material. Should we factor in these diseased kids as part of the cost of driving an electric car? I'd like to leave you with these thoughts. California is building the largest battery in the world near San Francisco, and they intend to power it from solar panels and windmills. They claim this is the ultimate in being green, but it is not. This construction project is creating an environmental disaster. Let me tell you why. The main problem with solar arrays is the chemicals needed to process silicate into the silicon used in the panels. To make pure enough silicon requires processing it with hydrochloric acid, sulfuric acid, nitric acid, hydrogen fluoride, trioethylene, and acetone. In addition, they also need gallium, arsenide, copper, indium, gallium, diselenide, and cadmium telluride, which also are highly toxic. Silicon dust is a hazard to the workers, and the panels cannot be recycled. Windmills are the ultimate in embedded costs and environmental destruction. Each weighs 1,688 tons, the equivalent of 23 houses, and contains 1,300 tons of concrete, 295 tons of steel, 48 tons of iron, 24 tons of fiberglass, and the hard-to-extract rare earth, neodymium, praseodymium, and dysprosium. Each blade weighs 81,000 pounds and will last 15 to 20 years, at which time it must be replaced. We cannot recycle used blades. Sadly, both solar arrays and windmills kill birds, bats, sea life, and migratory insects. There may be a place for these technologies, but you must look beyond the myth of zero emissions. I predict EVs and windmills will be abandoned once the embedded environmental costs of making and replacing them become apparent. Going green may sound like the utopian ideal and easily espouse catchy buzzwords, but when you look at the hidden and embedded costs realistically with an open mind, you can see that going green is more destructive to the Earth's environment than meets the eye, for sure. If this had been titled, "The Embedded Costs of Going Green," would you have read it? Please share if you wish. Absolutely. Stunning. Do you think AOC and other of these fanatics who are promoting the Green New Deal have any idea what they're talking about? It could not be more obvious. We're dealing with scientifically illiterate political fanatics who are going to do more to damage the United States than any foreign enemy has ever. Where Donald Trump secured the triumph of making us energy independent, where it turns out that oil is an unlimited resource, is produced naturally by Earth. It has nothing to do with fossil fuels. And where our whole economy depends on gas and oil and coal. And the idea of destroying them is to destroy America permanently. Permanently. I mean, it's unreal what's going on here. Let me do a double check to make sure I have no... There's a report I have from one of our listeners about the booster shot, a video, but I can't right now get it to pull up. I'll check that out, and thanks for sending. Meanwhile, and this is a further reflection on the State of the Union, 14 attorneys general have sued the Biden administration over the DOJ's call to investigate protesting parents. 14 Republican attorneys general led by Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita have sued the Biden admin for not responding to a Freedom of Information request related to the Department of Justice calling for surveillance of parents expressing opinions at school board meetings and other forums. The lawsuit follows a chain of events that began last October. It was filed in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Indiana, Indianapolis Division. It asked the court to force the Biden administration to respond to the request for information. It names President Joe Biden, Attorney General Merrick Garland, U.S. Department of Education, Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona, and the U.S. Department of Education as plaintiffs. The coalition read by Rokita are from the states of Arizona, Arkansas, Georgia, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Missouri, Montana, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Texas, and Utah. On October 4th, Garland issued a memo for the disturbing spike in harassment, intimidation, and threats of violence against school administrators, board members, teachers, and staff, and called for the FBI and other federal law enforcement agents to monitor activities in school districts nationwide. 6 months later, the attorneys general argue the Biden administration had provided no evidence of any spike in threats against school personnel by American parents. Garland issued the memo after the National School Board Association sent a September 29th letter to the Biden administration lamenting that parents were opposing the teaching of critical race theory and other divisive ideologies, referring to parental protests as domestic terrorism. And that's coming from the National School Board Association, calling parents who oppose to critical race theory and no doubt sex ed involving transgenderism and children's right to declare their own gender, that's being called domestic terrorism by the National School Board Association. Garland's memo attacked dissent by parents during local school board meetings in an effort to intimidate parents into giving up their constitutional rights to direct the upbringing and education of their children. They anticipated his memo was based on the National School Board Association false accusations against parents. Garland confirmed this during his October 21st testimony before the U.S. House Judiciary Committee. He said, the National School Board Association, which represents thousands of school boards and school board members, says that there are these kinds of threats. When we read in the newspapers reports of threats of violence, in other words, he's dependent on newspaper reports and a letter from a school board that obviously has a vested interest and wants to keep parents out of their business of teaching ideologies to our young people. They believe they should be the sole determiners of what our students learn, even if it's rubbish about white men being racist, that racism is endemic in the United States, and that kids have the right to pick their own gender. According to his testimony, the White House asked for examples of specific threats. However, no such threats were presented. The National School Board Association apologized for the language used in the letter the day after Garland testified on October 22nd. More than half of its state affiliates distanced themselves from the national group, some pulling dues and membership. But these actions weren't enough, the attorneys general argue. Garland still has not rescinded his memo, and the administration has not responded to the request for information 6 months later. As though these actions weren't enough, the attorney generals argue, Garland still hasn't rescinded his memo, and the administration has not responded to the request. The 14 attorneys general sent the letter on October 26 requesting information from Biden and Garland. It followed an October 18th letter sent by a 17-state coalition. They've demanded Garland rescind his memo instructing the FBI to investigate parents and produce all communications of any federal officials or agencies related to the September 29th NSBA letter. They never received a response prompting the lawsuit. We just want the facts, Rotika said. Rather than cooperate, the Biden administration has sought to conceal and downplay its culpability. What are they hiding? Why won't they come clean? Hoosiers and all Americans deserve to know. The Biden administration wants to sweep under the rug these inexcusable assaults on parents' freedom of speech. But we're fighting for full transparency and accountability for this misconduct so it won't happen again. Well done, attorneys general. I compliment their action. Meanwhile, and this is also from Indiana, and I find this heartening as well, Indiana approves repealing gun permit requirement. Republican lawmakers wish through a bill that would repeal Indiana's requirement for a permit to carry a handgun in public on Tuesday after further loosening the state's firearms law, despite public opposition from the state police superintendent and some major law enforcement organizations. The House and Senate approved the repeal as Republican lawmakers revived it last week after conflict among GOP senators had temporarily sidelined the issues. The Senate approved the bill 30-20 after House members earlier voted 68-30, largely along party lines, in what was among the final issues taken up as the Republican-dominated legislature neared adjournment. Once the measure arrives at Governor Eric Holcomb's desk, he will have 7 days to sign or veto, or it would then become law without his signature. The Republican governor hasn't stated whether he supports the concept of not requiring handgun permits, saying last week he would give the bill careful thought. The provision would not allow anyone age 18 or older to carry a handgun in public except for reasons as having a felony conviction. It would not deny anyone age 18 or older to carry a handgun except for reasons such as having a felony conviction, facing a restraining order from a court, or having a dangerous mental illness. Supporters argue the permit requirement undermines Second Amendment protection by forcing law-abiding citizens to undergo police background checks that can take weeks. The bill's sponsor, Ben Schmaltz, a Republican from Auburn, said it was meant for the lawful Hoosier who hasn't done anything wrong, doesn't want to be fingerprinted to obtain a handgun permit. Criminals already carry firearms without regard to the law, Koch said. Lawful carry simply puts a law-abiding citizen on an equal footing. The repeal proposal easily passed the House in January, but faced more skepticism from the Senate. I agree with this 100%. I have a concealed carry permit myself. The fact is that Democrats have no understanding of the nature of guns, crime committed with guns. They think that it's somehow racist that the overwhelming majority of those prosecuted for gun crimes are black, but that's because blacks commit the overwhelming majority of crimes involving guns. If you want to know the outcome, what they want for the U.S., look at Chicago. The most stringent gun control laws, but the highest gun violence rate. Thank you for joining me back on Wednesday with the event.
This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict, but...